Good morning. It's almost 8 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. This morning, coming up on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, Ani Haynes facilitates a conversation. The change we need, war in Afghanistan, Bush-era politics, invasions, right-wing hysteria, and racism. Is this real change? And ask, where do we go from here? And good morning, good morning. It's about 9 minutes after 8 o'clock this morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ani. This morning, I'm here in the studio with Joe Walsh. He's the lone vet. He's joining me to talk about, well, issues that we all need to get involved with right about now. Joe is a longtime activist working for justice and peace. And this morning, the focus of our discussion is bringing together a broad-based people's movement, calling for peace and compassion as national priorities, and looking at the state of our nation in the first, 10 months or so of this new administration. During last year's presidential race, we saw an amazing amount of work poured into the Obama campaign by liberals and progressives. The mantra of hope and change on near everyone's tongue. And after the hellish 8 years of the Bush-Cheney administration, change was desperately needed and hope seemed pretty dim. On election night, people danced in the street. I myself, well, never a big supporter of Obama. There were just not a lot of things that he had really put forward in his campaign that I was truly excited about. But even I was caught up. I walked around joyously around Lower Burnside. I had a recording unit in one hand. Truth to tell, I had a gin and tonic in the other hand. And I was very happily running around talking to other celebrants who had just sort of poured out from houses, from clubs, from places where people were watching big screen televisions, inaugural speech or acceptance speeches and things like that. There was more spontaneous partying in public that night than on any New Year's Day and 4th of July combined, near as I can figure. And it felt kind of good. That was a night of, well, it felt like some opening, some potential. Even if I wasn't so excited about the guy that just got elected, the raw spirit, the energy of people who were excited to see change gave me some of that hope that had been talked about. So after that election, I noted on the show that our challenge at this point was to build on that momentum, to actually craft what that change is going to look like and to push like hell in that direction. In these last 10 months, I believe that the left has more or less failed in this calling. I'm not seeing the momentum continue. In fact, almost immediately, I heard calls from national organizations that we had to let off some pressure and let this administration settle in. A huge mistake, and I believe one that we are paying for now and will continue to pay for. Let's go ahead and bring Joe into the conversation about here. Good morning, Joe. Welcome, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Thank you. We had talked briefly yesterday about some of the tone changes in national peace organizations, how those organizations that had been so strong in the anti-war voice in coalescing change and opposing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan under the Bush-Cheney administration, how some of those same national organizations were very reticent to continue that movement, that push under this new administration.
Well, the problem seems to be that progressives have tied themselves to the Democratic Party. And once you do that, then once you get a Democratic president, it becomes very difficult to keep his feet to the fire. We are very good, and I'm going to put a disclaimer in here. I only speak for myself. I don't speak for any organization that I'm associated with, because I say some radical things that the organizations don't agree with.
One of the reasons why I was excited to get you on the show.
Okay. Right now, what we're doing is we're down at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. We're protesting against a judge that sits on that court. Now, that court is the best court in the United States. It has 48 judges on it that come down with decision after decision that are really good. They come down with some bad decisions. However, most of the time, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is a wonderful court. And for Bush to put Jay Harvey, the criminal torture judge, on that court is a double slap. Nobody knows about this judge.
Right.
Why is that? Where the hell were the progressives when this guy was being nominated in the Senate? 19 senators voted against him out of 100. 19.
19 senators voted against the confirmation of this judge to what has to be the most progressive of the circuit courts in our justice system. And this judge, you say, is responsible for, in part, one of the judges that was responsible for the torture memos that justified the ill treatment, the torture of detainees and prisoners.
Most people are aware of a professor by the name of Yu.
Yeah.
He teaches out of Berkeley and sometimes in a conservative college down in Orange County in California. Judge, and I have problems with his name. It's so easy to pronounce, but I have a mental block against this guy because this guy is so ugly. He was Yu's boss in the State Department, not the State Department, I'm sorry, in the Department of Justice that verified, okay, approved, and assisted in the writing of torture memos that said it was perfectly okay to beat someone to death with a flashlight. No problem. If he died, he must have did something wrong because you were doing everything right. Waterboarding, everybody knows about.
It's unconscionable.
100 prisoners died in our custody. Nobody knows that.
Right.
They know about waterboarding. We beat to death 100 prisoners and no investigations. So who are we as a people? So go back to your original question.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? Are we the American people that look at the Statue of Liberty and say, wow, that is really good stuff? Or are we the 60 or 70,000 people that showed up in Washington, D.C. with signs that said, Obama is a socialist, he's a communist, he's a bum, get him, put him where Kennedy is. That's, are we that America?
Right.
That's the fundamental question, and we have to answer that. And Jimmy Carter answered it. He came out at an 85-year-old wonderful ex-president.
Oh, yes.
And he said, there's something wrong in America. This is racist stuff that happened in Washington, D.C. So we need to sit down as a country, as a people, as individuals, and say, who the hell are we? Are we racist? Are we the warmongers of the world? We, as a nation, are the arms dealers of the world.
Yes.
There are five nations, the five top nations that sell arms all around the world to everybody, anybody that's got a buck. We are number one. Aren't we proud of that?
But we're number 37 in healthcare.
That's right.
That's right. I wonder if those two things actually correlate.
Sure they do.
You know, like our prioritization as the military superpower may be taking away those resources from what we could actually be a superpower of, which is taking care of people and providing health care for all at a fraction of the cost of these wars, I have to say. You know, you mentioned Carter's statement, which I was very heartened to hear Carter's statement. I'm really disappointed to hear the press secretary for the White House saying that, oh, well, you know, that's all nice and everything, but Obama is sure that racism has nothing to do with the criticism of his presidency. That is That's just a slap in the face to anyone that is seriously working against racism in this country to ignore it when it happens on such a national and grand scale. So there's that. I'd love to talk about that in a moment. But you had mentioned these huge rallies. Well, I won't even say huge, really. It's not that huge. 60,000 people. We had far more than that coming out against wars throughout the last 8 years. But we have these gatherings, what I'd like to call AstroTurf gatherings. It's not really a grassroots movement. It's a bunch of folks that are being spoon-fed hate demagoguery from the extreme right and being sort of riled up into being shock troops. There's no critical thought. There is a whole lot of vitriol and hate coming from this so-called movement. And I'm wondering, it seems like while the left stepped back to give this administration a chance to settle in, to find some sort of bipartisan power, to work with everyone in Washington, whatever those calls were for the left stepping back a few months ago, it looks like pundits from outlets like Fox News, etc., just took that opportunity to whip up the ignorant into those shock troops. And they're doing what they do best, viciously attacking common sense and reason with an eye to serve corporate masters. So how is it that we as progressives can work towards accountability, can be as absolutely insistent that we have representation and voice in this government, that the people's needs get addressed and are met, without playing into the hands of these hate mongers and racists?
Well, one of the things that we really need to understand is what is a progressive.
That's a good place to start.
There's an awful lot of people that are running around and saying they're progressive. They're not. Right? Progressive. For instance, you have a radio station here in Portland that constantly says that they are the only progressive station in Portland. It's amazing to me that KABU is here, and you must be broadcasting, and this is a hell of a lot more progressive than KPOJ. And they are not progressive people on that radio station. They're cocktail liberals. And here's the difference. A progressive is Bernie Sanders. He's an independent, has nothing to do with the Democratic Party, caucus with them because they overlap.
Sure.
But he's a true progressive because he gets up in the morning and he says, what can I do to make it better? What can I do to extend my authority, my influence to do something for somebody else, whether it's in education or it's in poverty or any of the social issues that come to mind? Bernie Sanders asked the question, am I doing the job for my constituents and the people of the United States? That's what he asked. Wyden asked, is this good for my career? Wyden says he's a progressive. He's a liar. Blumenau says he's a progressive. He's a liar. They are not progressives. They get up in the morning and say, is this a good move for me? Is Pelosi going to be happy with me? Is Harry Reid going to be happy with me?
How is the Democratic leadership going to view this?
That's right. They are not progressive. So the first thing we have to do is say, what the hell is a progressive? So if you look at Bernie Sanders, that's a good model. If you look at yourself in the mirror, why don't you just ask yourself, if I do something today that helps somebody else, that makes me a progressive. Because my mind is opening up. And each time that I do that, I learn something. So as I'm sitting here with you today, and we haven't met before, I don't think, I will learn a great deal from you. And the people that I surround, because I am a progressive in the sense that I don't have a closed mind. And I can change it. You give me the right information, I'll say, whoa, let me think about that. That's a progressive. And too many people are running around saying, well, I'm a progressive. Of course. The Democratic Party in Oregon, with people like Jefferson Smith, he's a progressive. He's not a progressive. He's a cocktail liberal.
Yeah.
And he's got a whole bunch of people around him that I call the bobbleheads. They say, yes, 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 yes. They're not progressive.
Sort of the, as a friend of mine has used the phrase, they become the ultimate echo chamber of ultimate rationality, where each other's yesing sort of bolsters these ideas that really don't serve anyone but themselves.
Yeah. A progressive to me is this. It's very easy for us to say Bush was a criminal. Very hard for us to say Obama is a criminal. If he invades and increases 100,000 troops in Afghanistan and continues these wars and occupation, he is a criminal. Very hard for us to say that because we really want him to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you kill somebody, you are a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
It may be justifiable. It may be first degree. But you've committed murder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that progressives really have to voice over and over again. If you criticize what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in Iraq and what may happen in Iran,
mm-hmm.
but you can't criticize what's going on in Gaza, something's wrong. Because you've sold your value system out for something that you've been brainwashed to believe. And you have to step back and say, murder is murder.
And if it doesn't make sense here, it doesn't make sense there either.
That's right. That's a progressive. So if we can agree to that, then we can move on. Then we could have meetings and say, okay, if what is it that we want to do as a movement? Now, on a local level, we're doing really well. We're going down to Ninth Circuit. We're going down to Blumenau's office. We've been arrested in Gordon Smith's office, which is really one of the things I'm most proud of, all right, because he's no longer existing. Are you hearing? Senator Wyden, Gordon's gone.
There you go. People's will. It's a powerful thing.
By getting arrested. People are doing everything they can. Most people don't understand that. The Department of Defense, Department of Energy, Department of Education, tens of thousands of people resigned under Bush, stood there and said, I am not doing that, and resigned. We don't know about them. We know about the Ann Rices. We know about some of the big names. But we don't know about the middle management guy that was in government for 20 years and stood up against Bush and said, go to hell. I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And lost his whole career,
mm-hmm.
or her career. Those are the heroes that we should mimic.
Yeah.
You know, Cindy Sheehan is my hero.
Yep.
Because she said to the peace movement, she said to the Democratic Party, you're corrupted.
Yep.
Because the peace movement has been taken over by the Democratic Party, and that's a problem. When we demonstrated in 68, 69, 70, we were fighting against not only Nixon, who also Johnson,
sure.
who was a Democrat.
Yeah.
And that's where it started. We fought the Democrats.
Right.
So if you're in the peace movement, you have to say to yourself, look, if you say to me, I'm going to give Obama a lot of time to sit, get settled in. He's only been there 8 or 9 months, and we don't really want to embarrass him and all of that crap. You're not a progressive. You don't belong in the peace movement. Get out. Go to the Democratic Party. Go to the cocktail party. Tell everybody how wonderful you are. But get the hell out of the peace movement because you don't belong there.
I want to go ahead and let our listeners join the conversation. 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning. Join on in. We are talking about progressive coalescing, a progressive movement bringing us together to effect social change for justice, for peace, for human needs, and looking at what's happening right now with this phony AstroTurf movement of extreme right hate speech. of whipping up a whole lot of fear-mongering amongst uneducated folks in this country who really rely only on a few sources for news. I mean, that to me right now is a sad state of affairs, that there are people who only look at Fox as valid news. I'd love to have your calls into the conversation to help elucidate what should be our national priorities. If we had, you know, I often hear about the left agenda. You know, it's an interesting concept. I'd love to actually see what the left agenda is. What is the progressive agenda? Are there three or five things that we can come together under and really work together, solidarity and unity, to effect, to bring about, to actually have progressive movement towards a compassionate society based on justice?
I was just thinking of one of the more comical signs that I saw with these people that gathered in Washington, and the sign said, "Keep government out of my Medicare. Keep government out of my Social Security."
And okay, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It cracked me up because it broke the tension for me when I was looking around. I just said, "What the hell are these people doing?" And I just laughed and I said, "Okay, I got it. They don't have a clue. They just don't have a clue. They're being led by charlatans, by a guy that was number two in the Republican Party. It's called Freedom Works. He's making lots of money, and he's bringing all these people in, and they don't have a clue of what's going on."
Indeed, indeed. I want to point out a couple of articles that have just come out last night, this morning, that I want to point listeners to. One is Tom Engelhart. He is a columnist. His own website is tomdispatch.com. This is published there, as well as on commondreams.org. And the article is America Hooked on War? It's an excellent article, I have to say, about the chronic state, the normalization of war in America, and how, again, it's time to break this addiction and to look past the sort of wars of empire that we've all sort of grown accustomed to. As he points out, we've been at war really constantly now for near 20 years with Iraq, and now spreading, you know, into Afghanistan and more. So I want to point people in that direction. Also, Amy Goodman had a great article come out a couple days ago now called "Let Us Not Become the Evil We Deplore," which looks again at the continuing policies of the war in Afghanistan nearing its seventh anniversary now, and comparing that to the futility of the war in Vietnam, and the comparison of time to stop it through a broad peace movement. Let us not become that which we deplore. Let's go ahead and take a listener at this time. Good morning, Pat. You're on the air.
Hey, Ani, it's been a long time.
Oh, it sure has. Welcome back.
Thank you. I have a long-held opinion that Americans won't change until the shelves of Walmart are empty, metaphorically speaking. And I would just love to ask your guest what he thinks it will take for a mass amount of people to actually change and do the right thing. So, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One of the things that we often talk about, and I get into trouble over this, is that I don't believe that the people of the United States have been touched by any of this. Now, people have lost their jobs, people have lost their homes, but basically, people are going about their business, and number one, they don't want to know what's going on the international level. They're terrible at geography. If you walked on the streets and asked people to pick out Afghanistan, they couldn't do it. If you asked them how many Supreme Court justices there were, they couldn't do it. if you ask them how many, who their representatives, they couldn't do it. So what does that say to us? It just says, you know, the great story that a friend of mine once told me, that she was about 14 years old and her mother found birth control pills in her closet. And they were prescription birth control with her name on it. But her mother said to her, tell me they're not yours. And she said, Mom, my name's on it. They're a prescription. They're mine. She said, just tell me they're not yours. She said, Mom, they're mine. She said, just tell me they're not yours. And she said, all right, they're not mine. Okay, we will never speak about this again. That's the American psychic.
I was, man, that's there is, the yeah, that's it in a psychic. Nutshell, isn't there?
Yes.
Huh. There's something about the comfort of denial, even when it flies in the face of all reason, even when you know that there is stuff to be done. There is something comforting about the denial and that sort of warm, fuzzy, you know, robe you can pull over yourself and, you know, get back to your very comfortable life. And really, in this country, we all have pretty comfortable lives, no matter where we are in that spectrum. I want to sort of along those lines from the article, Is America Hooked on War? Tom Englehart writes, because the U.S. does not look like a militarized country, it's hard for Americans to grasp that Washington is a war capital, that the United States is a war state, that it garrisons much of the planet, and that the norm for us is to be at war somewhere at any moment. Similarly, we've become used to the idea that when various forms of force or threats of force don't work, our response, as in Afghanistan, is to recalibrate and apply some alternative version of the same under a new or rebranded name, the hot one now being counterinsurgency or COIN, in a marginally different manner. When it comes to war, as well as preparations for war, more is now generally the order of the day. He goes on to elucidate for quite some time. It's a great article, I got to say. I won't read all four pages of it to you. But the ending I will get back to. He says, democracy itself has been militarized and, like our country, is now hidden behind massive fortifications and has been placed under Lord of the Flies-style guard. The State Department's embassies are now bunkers and military-style headquarters for the prosecution of war policies, its officials, when enough of them can be found, are now sent out to the provinces in war zones to do civilian things. Peace itself, simply put, there's no money in it. Of the nearly $1 trillion that the U.S. invests in war and war-related activities, nothing goes to peace. No money, no effort, no thought. The very idea that there might be peaceful alternatives to endless war is so discredited that it's left to utopians, bleeding hearts, and feathered doves. As in Orwell's Newspeak, while peace remains with us, it's largely been shorn of its possibilities. No longer the opposite of war, it's just a rhetorical flourish embedded, like one of our reporters, in war speak. What a world might be like in which we begin not just to withdraw our troops from one war to fight another, but to seriously scale down the American global mission, close those hundreds of bases. Recently, there were nearly 300 bases, macro to micro, in Iraq alone, and bring our military home is beyond imagining. To discuss such obviously absurd possibilities makes you an apostate to America's true religion and addiction, which is force. However much it might seem that most of us are peaceably watching our TV sets or computer screens or iPhones, we Americans are also always marching as to war. We may not all bother to attend the church of our new religion, but we all tithe, we all partake. In this sense, we all live peaceably in a state of war. It's a great article, and I do encourage people to check it out. And it brings me to the idea of the Department of Peace and the idea of reprioritizing our national resources to fundamentally, to radically change at the root our foreign relations, to put resources into creating peace in the world instead of brokering war around the world. What do you think, Jill?
Well, the Department of Peace, it's a fascinating idea, because just to imagine at these war councils or the cabinet meetings, if you had a voice that interrupted the generals and the admirals and they were marching off to war, and somebody that had the respect of the people in the room would say, wait a minute, folks. This is what it's going to cost you. If somebody was in the room with Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney and said to them, this is what it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you your presidency. You're going to be known as the worst president we've ever had. Would they say, well, maybe this is not a good idea? Could be. Bush was such an egotistical bastard, he might have not gone to war. So it's a great idea. And the thing about the bases around the world is we have 1,000 bases around the world. I spent 9 years in the Navy. We went to Naples. We went to France. We went to different countries on the East Coast and the West Coast. We went to Singapore. We went to Hong Kong. We have bases, 1,000 bases around the world. Doesn't that sound like Rome?
Mm-hmm. And just
and
on
we're
the
doing
empire.
It better than Rome did.
I remember the phrase, you know, the British Empire, the empire on which the sun never sets, right? Well, that ended. But now look at us, right? Pretty much there.
We took their place.
Right, exactly so.
And guess what? How many bases, foreign bases, are in the United States? I don't know of any.
Right.
And we have 1,000 spread around the world. So when we say to somebody like Iran, you can't have a nuclear weapon, they have to look at us and say, what are you talking about? You're the arms dealer of the world. You have 1,000 bases. You have an empire. You crush countries that disagree with you. You assassinate leaders, and you're telling us we can't have nuclear power?
You know, you just asking the question, how many foreign countries have military bases in the U.S.? There's a question I don't think I've ever heard before. And I have to say, when you ask me, I'm like, none? And now I'm just, that has got my mind spiraling. I mean, what would happen? Just think. Say Italy decides that they're going to open a base in America because they want to protect their, you know, national interests. And they think Indiana probably has something to do with something they want.
Yeah.
Why not open a base there? What do you think the response of the U.S. would be there? I can't imagine. Oh, come on in. You've been our ally for years. Please open up a military base in Indiana.
Those 60,000 people that went to Washington, D.C. would completely freak out.
Why?
And they would say, Italians have invaded the United States of America.
I mean, it just boggles the mind to ponder down these avenues. Well, it's about 19 minutes before 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm Ani. My guest this morning is Joe Walsh. He's the lone vet, an activist working towards justice and peace in Portland. We are discussing the state of a broad-based progressive movement. How do we actually come together to affect positive social change? How do we get to our radical needs and advance them as national priorities together? You are a part of that conversation. Call 503-231-8187. And we're going to take a call right now from Beth. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I don't have a solution, but I wanted to make a comment on what I'd heard before we went into Iraq. It was Senator Smith at a podium. This was after 9/11. And Hatfield, who was not in office, but of course he had been a politician for most of his life, ex-Senator Hatfield, they were standing together and they were being asked by the press how they felt about, you know, what should be done, about how should we retaliate, what should we do. And Smith spoke up first and really loud and said, we've got to go over there and get them and, you know, show them who, you know, who's boss and da-da-da-da. And he went on and on. It was a mindless little hate speech. Anyway, and then he stopped. And then Senator Hatfield got up and all he said was, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the earth. And he just looked down. What goes around comes around,
uh-huh.
what I say. And it's pretty scary because what's coming? You know, it's something's got to be coming for what all the stuff that we're doing. It's so horrible. But anyway, I love Mr. Walsh. I love your voice, that you're a veteran and that you have so much wisdom. It gives me hope to hear such strength.
Thanks very much for your call this morning,
Beth.
Bye.
Thank you very much. If you noticed from my accent, I grew up in New York City.
I was going to guess that in
Brooklyn, New York. In my family, we had police officers and we had firefighters. So when 9/11 happened, it was devastating. And I remember saying to my brother on the phone, "My God, the repercussions are going to be awful." And even I, making that statement so early, didn't understand the depth of the hatred that came out of Washington, D.C. We have destroyed Iraq. Destroyed it.
Yes.
4 million people are now scattered around the area. We have killed over 1 million Iraqis. Shock and awe was something that Americans were so proud of. Shock and awe, for God's sakes. Those of us that went to war, those of us that saw it from the air and from the sea and from the foxholes, we stood on the bridges and we said to the American people, don't do this, because you will destroy America. You will destroy what we stand for. Don't do this. And 70% and 80% of the American people cheered when we started going into Afghanistan. They didn't know where it was. They didn't care. We were attacked. We wanted vengeance. We got the vengeance. We've been doing it for 8 years. Isn't that enough? Obama could be the greatest president we've ever had, and his presidency is going to be destroyed if he continues to go into Afghanistan. No outside nation has ever won a war in Afghanistan. None. The Romans, the French, the Russians, all left with their tails between their legs and tears that left their blood on the sands of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. We have a very sharp president, an intelligent, wonderful president. Why the hell doesn't he understand that? Once again, veterans are saying, don't do this. And, you know, sometimes I say to my wife, I am getting so goddamn tired of being right and ignored. And that's what's happening. The people that are right, Cindy Sheehan is right. Senator Sanders is right. The peacemakers all are right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're being ignored again and again and again. And somewhere along the line, it's got to stop. Because we can't afford to do this. I look at my grandchildren and it scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to see what happens. I'm not going to be around here that much longer. But my grandchildren will, and my children will. This is a great nation. It has such potential. And we just waste it. We just waste it. And when we're protesting down in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, I have people coming up to me and saying, the only mistake that we made was we should have killed them all. We should have never brought them to Gitmo. Just shoot them. Shoot them. That's not America to me. That's not what I fought for. I fought for the Bill of Rights. I fought for the Constitution. I fought for freedom. I didn't fight to kill them. I didn't do that.
Right.
So 10 years of my life went to fighting wars. 40 years of my life has gone to say to people, look, war is awful, awful. And don't let these people that have never been to war order you into war. Because they don't understand it. It's like a game to them. It's like a video game. We have drones now that people are sitting in Vegas running the damn drones, and they think they're playing a game. And we are killing people in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, by drones, by remote control. That's not America.
I want to quote from the article by Amy Goodman I mentioned earlier, Let Us Not Become the Evil We Deplore. She points out that on October 7th, the U.S. enters its ninth year of occupation in Afghanistan, equal to the time the U.S. was involved in World War I, World War II, and the Korean War combined. Obama campaigned on his opposition to the war in Iraq, but he pledged at the same time to escalate the war in Afghanistan. On his first Friday in office, Commander-in-Chief Obama's military fired three Hellfire missiles from an unarmed drone into Pakistan, reportedly killing 22 people, mostly civilians, including women and children. He has increased U.S. troops in Afghanistan by more than 20,000 to a total numbering 61. This does not include private contractors who now outnumber those troops. The new U.S. military commander in Afghanistan, Stanley McChrystal, is expected to ask for even more troops, and I believe he has asked for, is it 20,000 more? I don't have that figure in front of me. There's one that has escaped my memory. I think it's a surge of another 10 to 20,000 troops that is being requested into Afghanistan, even as most of our allies are making very concrete plans to get the hell out. So what does that all mean? I don't know. Let's go ahead and listen to one of our callers now. Good morning, Brian. You're on the air.
Oh, howdy. What was your name again, sir?
Oh, my name is Joe Walsh.
Well, it's a pleasure to listen to you. I am really fired up. You're thinking along my lines that I've been thinking about since I was in my late teens. And, you know, I don't have a solution either, but I look to some people with a bit of hope, like and from my own country, George Galloway.
Yes.
And, you know, like you say... even Amy Goodman, but the I think one of the solutions is, and what terrifies the right especially, is that the education system here has been gutted, and there's no education really other than the formula, we are the greatest, and whatever we do is right, and we are exceptional, and people being infotained to death, like there's, they can't distinguish the difference between their uber-violent video games and the real thing, and I just applaud you for kicking ass and really telling it like it is. We don't hear enough of that. And do you have a website?
Yes, we have a website called individualsforjustice.org.
Okay, great. I'll check that out. And so, you know, again, even for so-called progressive people on the on TV, Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, who are great. I love it when Keith gets pissed off. They sometimes don't hammer the point home is that the U.S. should never have been over there or almost anywhere else in the first place. There's incredible injustices going on, and... fortunately, less of now in South America, but in other nations that they could help out with, but they're often sponsoring these things. So it's, again, it's a double standard, it's a veil of ignorance, and it's, by the way, I'm not a citizen, but they're taking my taxes, so by God, I like that shout. And, you know, I've never become a citizen partly because of this addiction to war, and a despair at the British being close allies, and also because of this, the non-medical system.
Well, there's that.
So anyway, I just want to thank you, and what some people would call stridency, and I get accused of the same thing, is just exasperation and wanting the truth to come out there. So I'll take, I just...
Thanks very much for your comment this morning, Brian.
Go for it. I love it.
Take care. Joe, again, I want to thank you for coming in. We have only about 5 minutes left. Before we end the hour here, I want to make sure people know about the vigils that you've been holding and where they can find more of your writing. You mentioned individualsforjustice.org, is it? .com.
.org.
Individualsforjustice.org is a website. I know that you post your writings to Portland Indie Media quite often, which is where I have been most familiar with your views and opinions. How can people work with you, get a hold of you? What are these vigils about?
Well, the vigils are about asking the judge to resign or demanding that Congress impeach judge that sits on the appellate court. The only way to get rid of a federal judge is to impeach him, and that has to go through the Senate. It has to start with the House of Representatives, and that's where you can come in. Call Blumenauer and tell him to do something about this judge. This judge belongs in prison, not just on the Geneva Convention, but on our own laws. Title 18 says minimum 20 years for people that justify torture. End of story. This guy belongs in prison. Call Blumenauer. Tell him start the works to get something going in the Judiciary Committee against this guy. We are there on Thursday from 12 noon until 2 o'clock down at the Pioneer Courthouse, that everybody knows it by that name. It's also the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Last Thursday, one of the women brought in some black cloth, and we did some street theater about you've seen the image of the torture person that was standing there with the hood over his head.
Right, haunting image. This man standing on a crate with his arms sort of in a crucified position. He's got electrodes.
We did that for 2 hours. We each took turns about every 10 to 15 minutes because we found out that to try to hold your arms out, just hold your arms out. Yeah. Nobody beating you or anything like that. It's very, very difficult to do.
Yeah.
So we had to change up every 10 or 15 minutes. And then some of the people that came across us and watched us do this street theater actually asked if they could do it. So they put the hood on and they stood on the pedestal. And they got a feeling of what it is to be in darkness and also had your arms stretch out. And we had these phony imitating wires coming out of your hands and stuff like that. So the image was very powerful. But some of the people that passed us asked if they could do it so they could feel what it would be like
creating
to go
that
through
connection.
This. And they were amazed, number one, how soon they had to bring their arms down.
Right.
These guys
that
were tortured were up there for hours.
Yeah.
All right. So
stress positions. That's
please,
not torture.
Yeah.
It's exercise. Yes. I remember Rumsfeld talking about that being exercise.
Yeah. So and after they did that, we just gave them a little bit of water.
Yeah, right.
A little bit of water.
You need water after exercise.
Yes.
I mean, the madness of these people, must be countered. And the fact that we continue to justify torture nearly a year after Bush has left office confounds me and saddens me and outrages me. Time to work together.
The two people I really need to acknowledge before we go.
We got one minute.
Okay. is Marilyn, who actually thought up the idea, and also Sharon, who also is a big part of the demonstration. They handle that part. And one of the things that we've experimented with doing, that we protest outside of Blumenauer's office and also this one, nobody leads it. There are no bylaws, no written statements. Nobody's really in charge. People
coming together out of conscience.
The creativity every week changes because everybody is thinking about, well, what can we do this time? So that's the exciting part. So please come down.
So that's Thursday, Pioneer Courthouse Square, noon to 2 p.m. every week.
Every week until he resigns or he is impeached. We're going to be there for a time.
and let victory prevail here. I mean, really, it's time to get the torturers the hell out of offices, and perhaps even, let's say, behind bars. Joe Walsh, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Really a pleasure to talk with you. Hope we can do it again soon.
Oh, it was great fun. It was great fun. And just one more thing.
Okay.
Don't lose hope. There are a lot of people working to try to get this country to what you think it should be.
And lots hopefully you're one of them, too. So join in that movement. Get active and demand peace and demand justice now.